Hello and welcome to the Veeam Community Podcast. I am your host, Rick Vanover. This is episode 9, Virtualization Storage with VAAI and Other Smarts on Disk. Here we go. Today, our guests are Chris Evans and Doug Carson. How you doing, Chris?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks very much for inviting me onto your podcast.
Hey, I'm not a problem. And Doug's with me in the co-pilot seat. How you doing, Doug?
I'm good, thanks. Thanks for having me again.
Great. Hey, guys, I appreciate you guys taking some time to talk with me today. And one of the things we want to talk about was virtualization storage, and I can't think of anybody better than Chris Evans. He's in that small circle of people that, you know, if I want some good, honest opinions on storage, that's who I'm going to go to. And Chris writes the blog at The Storage Architect, and he covers a lot of virtualization stuff as well and has a broad consulting practice. Chris, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about you, what you do and where you're from and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, thanks, Rick. Yeah, so I'm based out of the UK, and as you said, I write a blog at thestoragearchitect.com, and it mainly originally covered storage, but it does cover virtualization now and other things. Occasionally, if I go off east and start talking about other stuff. In my day job, because obviously I can't afford to blog full time, in my day job I run a consultancy with a number of colleagues, a company called Langton Blue, and we look at storage but also the wider IT issues, solving problems for people, and that's both technology and process.
Cool. And, you know, if you haven't seen the Storage Architect blog, I really encourage everybody to check it out. It's good stuff. And so, you know, storage is so critical to virtualization. It might be understated. Sometimes you can probably get away with it in smaller organizations, but as you scale up and out, it's definitely a critical part of it. And Chris and I have had a number of discussions over the years about VAAI, and now there's two other series of features that are coming for storage. It's going to make it a lot easier, but Chris and I one time were talking about, well, it'd be kind of cool if VAI did this and VAI did that. And Chris had the best idea ever with secure defrag.
So, yeah, thanks for that, Rick. Yeah, here's the thinking. When you do defrag, you move blocks of data around, and a lot of the time those blocks are moved logically. You copy the data, but you don't delete the old blocks. And whilst that's fine when you can keep track of them, in say a defrag situation, it isn't good if somebody took that disk and wanted to scan it, they could still find potentially old copies of data. My idea was to allow you to wipe those old blocks clean by using a command that would just tell the array to write zeros over it, and it would be much more secure than today's defrag system, but wouldn't take a lot of extra CPU and IO to actually achieve.
Right,
that
on.
Was the basis of it.
Yeah, and see, that's I think would be great, and that's the type of thing that we'd have to hook into like VMware tools and all that kind of stuff to know where to look and stuff. But yeah, that's just one example. You know, him and I just pub talk, if you will, of great ideas for this and that, and he had the best one. But, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about storage today, specifically for virtualization. And, you know, there's a lot of new things coming out. VAAI, as we know, for certain storage platforms is going to be good stuff. We've got sublun tiering available on a number of storage products now. And then looking into the future, storage DRS, is, you know, we're getting some glimpses of what that's going to be like. And Doug and I were on Twitter talking yesterday, and we're like, well, that might be a problem, something like storage DRS and sublun tiering. I don't want to say tripping over each other, but, you know, guys, what do you think of that potentially?
My thought was, I just saw a couple of things out about storage DRS, and then I started thinking about, you know, auto-tiering and whether or not the two, as you said, Rick, kind of step on each other. You know, so that was kind of thought, do you really need storage DRS in terms of moving VMs to other data stores to reduce I/O and that data store and stuff like that to help out? Or my view would be that the auto-tiering would deal with that. So I'm just curious as to what Chris's thoughts about, if he has thoughts about that would be.
Yeah, so let's go into two thoughts then. First of all, the idea of what the sublime tiering would be. And clearly, the idea of that is to place individual components of a LUN onto different tiers of storage, i.e. different performance tiers of storage, so that if you have a hot block within a LUN, that block will get the better I.O. quality without having to dedicate that whole LUN to that tier of storage. So you can be much more granular and much more efficient with your I.O. responses. Now, that's great in an environment where it auto-balances that and the host doesn't need to know what's going on. But clearly, DRS would come in and start saying, I need to set the I.O. policy based on what I think this disk can now do, and that's a continually changing scenario. I haven't seen a great deal of what DRS will do yet. I don't know whether you guys can answer to what you think DRS will do exactly. But if it's that performance issue, then potentially you could find the two fighting against each other.
Well, the fundamental thing about storage DRS, and I'll admit that I need to review some of the materials, like they had some previews at VMworld and stuff, but one of the fundamental, the unit is a virtual machine, okay? So the virtual machine has individual virtual disks, which would be on one or more data stores, which are on LUN. And so those units of measure include the virtual machine and then the individual VNBKs and then their individual associated latencies. So if storage, something like sub-LUN tiering on the storage processor can pick that up and move around those hotspots to keep that unit of measure on the virtual machine good as far as overall latency. By no means is sub-LUN tiering mainstream, and by no means is VAAI mainstream, and by no means is storage DRS available yet. So we're kind of going theoretical, but you know, these are the types of things we want to think about before we, you know, load up on these technologies and just run with them. But I think that individual unit, the virtual machine disk latency measure per data store in terms of that virtual machine, that's going to be what is like the differentiator, you know, the handoff point between the two technologies. Would you agree with that, guys?
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I mean, the other thing that I would be interested to find out in is whether DRS will look at things like the path to the device. So if you've got multipath I.O. to the device, will it load balance across those paths as well as moving data around based on latency?
Well, that depends on the storage protocol and storage product in use, but that's the correct answer. Other than that, you know, there's some yeses and some noes in the mix. But, you know, so I think that, you know, these are good features coming out. And I'll admit, I've not used a VAAI-supported storage array yet as far as the right version of vSphere, the right firmware on the product and all that. Chris, have you used a...
No, I haven't. And I'd really like to get into a position where I could. But I think it's such a new technology. I don't think it's widely deployed out there. And we know that a lot of the vendors have only recently started supporting it. Stephen Foskett did a great summary of that by ArrayType. And even though the vendors have only just supported it, it's obviously on the latest versions of code, and a lot of people may have not put that anywhere until, you know, other than, say, their lab environments.
Absolutely, because it's not just a matter of... It's not a normal update in most situations in terms of vSphere, because the vSphere updates are very regular, you know, they... Just had one recently. You know, we have Update Manager, or you can do it by hand with the host update command. But then, you know, storage firmwares, generally speaking, if you have a product that's already in place, those don't get upgraded as frequently as, you know, like operating systems and things like VMware. So I think that the cycles are kind of like moving at different rates. If you have a new product, that's different. You know, if everything's new, like a new segment of the data center or a whole new data center, it might be easier off. But how about you, Doug? Have you used any end-to-end VAAI solutions yet?
Yeah, I'm unfortunate I have, actually. We've a couple of things that have a couple of little left-hand solutions which we've used, which are SAN IQ9, which had some VAAI integration into it. So we've had a wee play about with that over the last few weeks, and some quite nice things. It's good, definitely good.
So, like, the, you know, the one thing I would see is clearly a big help would be like deploy a template. Okay, how did that go? Or format a data store.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it was the first step in terms of the Storage Beam Motion kind of story, if you can call it that. Having the ability to offload that kind of load instead of going through, you know, the ESX host to the DRA. So it certainly helps for things, obviously, things like Storage DRS, but also in things when you're maybe deploying out VMs quite regularly, or you're maybe doing virtual desktops and stuff like that. So all definitely helps.
How about, did you do any snapshots? Anything with snapshots in any of those environments?
No, they're very, very basic environments. I think they're actually still in the workshop right now, so.
Oh, no, that's not a problem. That's telling it like it is. I like it.
You sounds like you've done a lot of, functionality testing. So you've got a product, you've had to play with it, you've tested some of the features to see whether they work. My concern with some of these new features is how they'll scale and how they'll work in a large environment. So if you think of the fact that you've got the ability to push down a huge amount of IO workload to the underlying hardware, it could be very easy for somebody to overload it. And if that's a shared environment, that could be more of an issue than it could be not having those features.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's another metric beyond, you know, your normal IOPS is your CPU cycle on your storage processor.
Yes.
I think you could get away with it in a lot of modular storage and below, but I think if you know, the high-end modular, or even probably, you know, of course the storage vendors would want to tell us otherwise, but yeah, it's uncharted water for sure, Chris.
Especially when you think about multi-tenant and stuff like that, and you know, there's lots of guys all doing different things. You know, how that would affect, you know, different environments and stuff like that as well. Definitely, yeah.
And I think you know that touches on another point. That's a great point about the multi-tenant stuff. But now we're touching on that point about the ability for us to interrogate that hardware and do an end-to-end analysis and say exactly where is my data in this environment. And if we're now going to start doing sublime tiering and all sorts of other things, how can I visualize what the impacts are on my host and my guests?
Yeah, I'd have to lean on, I guess, the storage platform. Well, see, that's where the connection between and the storage platform and a virtualization platform is going to really deliver that best. I think that visibility, if they're so integrated from the command set, then they need to be integrated from a managing and monitoring tool as well.
Yeah. I think there's a slight disconnect in some parts of that as well, isn't there, between the storage and VMware in terms of being able to monitor that kind of element. It's obviously the storage all it sees is blocks, but hopefully in the future as things go on, it will understand a bit better of what constructs a VM, what constructs a VMDK and things like that, and maybe that will help in the future.
I think it's interesting because people think that as we move to newer technology and something a bit more advanced like virtualization, they think that their jobs won't be as important or as interesting. I think the few things we've just thrown around there show you that, you know, that it still will be, because there's still a huge amount to understand in these environments, because they're going to be as complex as ever. In fact, in some respects, they're going to be more complex than they are today.
Well, I think that you're exactly right. What has to happen is you have to go from anybody can set up and deploy this stuff, you know, even a 5-year-old on an iPad, right? But you have to be the one that's going to ensure that it's going to run correctly. And that's where, you know, everybody is going to be pushed to the next level. And if they can do that, that's going to be the value add. So you're right. It is more complex. You know, the bar is raised, if you will, for the storage virtualization data center administrator. And it's going to be tougher in your scale point, Chris, because the storage administrator is not the virtualization administrator, and the reverse is the same. You know, there might not be permissions down to disk from the server admins in the larger environments, yet the tools are capable of it. So the visibility may be removed, but the command sets are still going to go through, you know, in terms of VAAI stuff. So, yeah, there's a lot of scale questions that go around with these, you know, uber features around storage. So, hey, guys, I got the other thing I was wanting to talk about related to storage, and I kind of asked Doug if he'd worked with snapshots, was hardware-assisted locking, which is one of the the features, because snapshots will improve with that. I've not seen it, but it's one of those features that are reported to improve the VAI. And you're right, Chris. Foskett's blog that especially outlined which SCSI command is available. That's really important, because VAI, I don't want to call it version 1, but the current iteration with, I think it's up to 5 commands, doesn't necessarily mean that every storage product supports every one of these commands. And that's an important takeaway.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you guys ever worked with, somebody that has gone through an upgrade of those storage processors, or Doug, in your case, was it a new product that was ready to go?
It was brand new install, so we didn't have any of the hassles of an upgrade, so we were fortunate then.
Sure.
I would imagine that people will be cautious about using new features such as the VAI stuff on an existing array. I think if they've got an array that's got lots of hosts on there, and they may not all be virtual hosts, they could be physical hosts if it's a particularly large array, I think they may be very cautious with that. And in some respects, if you can afford to, it would almost make sense to deploy a new piece of kit and to understand what the data profile and the performance profile is with those features turned on before you rolled it across the remainder of your environment.
Piece of kit. I love your correct British English. For American English, piece of kit is what, just a new storage infrastructure? Is that what you mean?
Piece of hardware, yes. I didn't even realize I'd said that.
No. Well, ever since you told me about TAT, I started paying attention. So, anyways. But no, you're right. It might make sense. And, of course, that's definitely the virtualization-centric answer, is to consolidate, this purpose, this storage, this virtualization platform all in. But as you know, Chris and Doug, that the enterprise is a mix. There's going to be physical servers. There's going to be a good example is like AIX systems, maybe if they're like VIO virtualization type of systems. They could be using the same SAN that the VMware environment is using, or mainframe LUNs or something like that. There's a lot of stakes in here, and then these other platforms may not be subject to these features, and so there might be a new bottleneck to just look out for.
It's funny you should mention that, actually, Chris, because a friend of mine they've got kit in their place which is VAI capable, but they are a bit wary about enabling it. And as a virtualization guy, I'm going, just enable it, you're fine, no problem at all. But in his environment, he's kind of thinking, I've got another bit of new kit coming in, so I'll test it on that first. So it's exactly what you said, is exactly what my friend is ending up like.
Yeah, well, it sort of makes sense, because I can see it could potentially be a very different data profile, and you really want to understand that, because it may affect your design of those sort of boxes you deploy in the future. You may want to design them slightly differently because the data profile turns out to be different.
I think the takeaway also is that an organization needs to have a representative test and development environment, okay? So, if you have a production environment that's storage processor A, fiber channel, multipath, lots of different drive tiers, it doesn't really do you much help if your dev environment is an open filer running on an old 3-5-year-old server with a bunch of Ultra 320 SCSI drives over 1 gig iSCSI, right? You see the disconnect? So if your development is there, and your production is way up here, you can't get that data profile. I was lucky in a couple different environments that I worked in where our storage processors were the same in dev. Maybe half the cache, or we didn't put the 8 gig fiber channel in dev, that type of stuff. But other than that, it was pretty representative. And I think you only really get that when you have formal cutoffs between dev and prod. In fact, I just got in a little Twitter spat with somebody just this last week. Not a Twitter spat, but just kind of a agree to disagree type of thing.
It's a twit piss.
A twit piss. There we go. All right. Sorry. Thank you. But I just got into one of those with a person who said, just throw it all in there and leverage DRS. And I kind of knew that would be their answer, okay, for CPU and memory, and presumably to the future with disk. But, the organization needs separate. Most organizations need separation. They want that line drawn between dev and prod and all that. And I think you really just have to pony up the money for those different trust zones or security zones or whatever you want to call them, workload zones. You know, just so you can get that data profile in an environment where you can take that risk and then with confidence take it to the other environment to go all in.
Yeah, I don't think anybody at this stage trusts any piece of hardware to say, I can run all my production and all my development and all my tests on the same box and have full security, full separate tenancy for each of those different layers and be able to implement security and change control across that. You have to compromise somewhere with that level of risk. However, Rick, yeah. you're touching on that locking mechanism made me think of another potential opportunity that is not virtualization related, but that could be useful, and that's to allow us to do long distance replication or movement of data without needing to do masses of transfers all in one hit when you do a failover.
Oh, really? So like a hot block, slow replicate, or hot block, quick replicate, slow block, replicate later, that type of thing?
Yeah, so if you think today, most of the storage arrays that are around today rely on replicating the entire LUN. Mm-hmm. So it's a LUN or nothing. And if you were using a physical server, that may not be a big deal because they might only be small, 10 gig, 5 gig, 30 gig. But when you start creating 500 gig terabyte LUNs, failing over that LUN or failing it back, that replication process is too big. It's not granular enough for the way you might want to move VMs around. And obviously the answer would be to move it to another VMFS, and then that one might be replicated in a different direction or something like that. Imagine if you could go to the sub-LUN and you could lock out an individual block and replicate that block. Then you would be able to you could replicate that in either direction.
Yeah,
because you could guarantee you could lock it out properly.
And you can manage snaps, you know, if you needed the whole thing, you could snap it and replicate the source and roll in the changes. Oh, yeah.
So you could lock the blocks that relate just to that VM.
The only thing I've heard in that relation, Chris, is something about SRM was, you know, at the moment, again, SRM is at the LUN level, and you fail over at the LUN level. And the only thing I've heard about that is the integrations about with VMware and storage is to, for that scenario, is to understand, for the storage to understand what the VM makes up the VM and what blocks make up the VM, so you're only replicating the VM. And that stuff I've heard, that when you mentioned that, that's what it reminds me of, is some of the stuff that has been talked about in terms of SRM and trying to break down the LUN level down to a more granular kind of construct to the VM level.
Yes, I don't know what the next iteration of the VAAI protocols will be, but one nice thing would be to be able to do some sub-LUN replication, because if you look at the way that replication occurs, it's done on some sort of sub-device level anyway. It may be a track or some other sort of sub-part of that LUN that relates to the physical hardware. So there's no reason why it couldn't be done, and that would be an absolutely fantastic feature to allow you to replicate parts of the LUN backwards and forwards.
Sure, sure. Well, then, you know, it gets complicated if you're talking sub-LUN. If you're talking like an individual VM, I mean, a lot of people go just the individual VM replication route, and cheap plug for Veeam, you know, Veeam backup and replication will replicate individual VMs, and if all scenarios are right, we can even do like change block tracking on that, so it can be smart. But I think for the non-virtual world, there's still a need for these solutions, and just you know, flat LUN replication may not be smart enough.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So, hey, guys, well, let's start wrapping it up here. I've got every podcast has its gimmick, and, Chris, you're on the hot seat for this one.
Hey, excellent.
I don't know if you read the notes I sent you, but you're getting these questions. So I have this segment of questions, Chris, called Three Views from You, okay? And it's a view.
Okay.
Yeah, a view into your past, a view into your present, and what you see in the future. So, Chris, in your past, in your technology experience, be it work or otherwise, what's the most interesting technical role, story, or thing that you've done at some point that you can share with us?
Now, that is a tough question. looking back at it, I would say probably the most interesting role was a company I set up about 10 years ago to sell music. Now, you might say, what's that got to do with technology? But we basically sold digital music on the internet before Apple did the iTunes store. And we allowed people to cut CDs themselves and ship, and we shipped them out to them in the post and so on. I did all of the technical build for that. So I built the system that would allow us to cut CDs en masse, digitized all the music, and built an entire order entry system and the web system to drive that. So we were thinking on our feet every day. We were coming up with new ideas. A lot of the technology didn't exist. We had to be creative, and it was just a fantastic time.
Well, that's awesome, dude. I had no clue. Anyways,
and I'm sure I must have mentioned that to you before. I must have bored you with that story before.
Maybe as you were running up to the karaoke mic, I don't know. So that's great, Chris. Cool. Well, how about today? What's going on right now that you're most interested and most passionate with in your technology practice in general?
I guess I'm really enjoying looking at the way that the virtualization side of things is going, because I can see where that will trend towards. Obviously, we've abstracted what devices that we already know today, like servers, but potentially in the future that could change. So that virtualization side is, I find, very interesting. And one of the things that I've become more interested in over the years, which I guess is probably a maturity and age thing, is process around that. So rather than just looking at the pure tech, it's how we actually make something work and actually get the processes right that surround it. And, of course, that's now becoming the big thing that everybody's talking about in terms of cloud, you know, taking what is IT but actually putting it in a proper service framework, allowing you to deliver that on demand.
Absolutely. I agree. It's the tech almost comes easy at that point, right?
Well, you know, I've walked around a million and one data centers, and we did some last year, and you're looking at the box, and the box looks like the box from the other vendor, and they're all the same. So, you know, that sort of, I found that less interesting than I ever used to. Mm-hmm. I think we've argued about that one before, but, you know, I don't care what cover it has on. What I'm more interested in is what we can do with it.
Rock on. Yeah. Well, looking into the future, Chris, what do you see as most interesting or exciting technology-wise coming down the pike?
So I sort of touched on it there a second ago in terms of the virtualization side of things. And I think the way that cloud's going is giving us a view of that. It's really difficult to see where we're going in the future. I mean, if you just look at, say, where we were. In fact, I had a conversation with my wife last night, and we had our first mobile phone in 1994. That's the time. And it was absolutely archaic. You know, it literally did make phone calls. And you look at what I have now, a multifunction device that can do so many things. I think the future is going to be more of that ability to get data anywhere, access to data, the ability to place your applications anywhere, and we'll be less bothered about the infrastructure, because that will just be sorted, and we'll just be putting our application wherever it is, and I think that will be a completely different paradigm, and it'll be very difficult for people to get their heads around, but it will be a massive leap forward.
Yeah, I agree 100%. It's one of those things that it's inevitable, and you know, you can't deny the scale of, you know, what's going to happen in the future. And back to the phone, I'm with you. The phone I wear around my neck, which just made that beep, that thing is more capable than the first network server I used to work on, disk storage included, okay? So,
exactly.
You know, it just blows me away.
You can't imagine where the technology will be because of the way it's changed in the last, even the last, say, 15 or 20 years. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it's awesome. Awesome. Well, hey, guys. Well, hey, we're going to wrap it up here. If anybody, any of the listeners have any comments on the podcast, you can send an email to podcast@veeam.com. And I tweet on behalf of Veeam at Veeam. I'm on Twitter at Rick Vanover. And Chris is on Twitter at Chris M. Evans. And is it thestoragearchitect.com, Chris?
That's right. Thank you very much for that plug.
Hey, no problem. And Doug is on Twitter at Douglas_Carson. Chris, Doug, thanks for being on the show, guys.
Thanks, Rick.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Cheers.